Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 80 of the Pika Serenity podcast. I am, as always, one of your hosts, Emelson, and I am joined by my co-host, Anomaly.
Hello.
And this week we're going to do what we said we were going to do last week, which is catch up on the lore corner in questions. So that means that basically the lore corner is our main topic for today. If that's not your thing, we are still going to do all the news and the changes from this week and talk about our progression. And you can duck out once we start talking about, you know, lore and story and things. But that is the plan for today.
Awesome.
So yeah. I guess you want to start things off talking about progression from this week?
Yeah. So I guess this will be sort of a common thing. We normally do this. It's actually, it was never on our notes. It's just sort of something if we remember to do or not. So official part of it. So we'll talk a little about progression. So yeah, I mean, I think last week we were working on Painsmith. We were talking about it, and I think I gave my update that I was a little upset that we only got, you know, about an hour and a half on the original version of Painsmith before they made the changes to that, adding breaks in the chains, in the spikes and the intermission. So we ended up killing Painsmith this week. It was on our Thursday, so on our second half, we ended up extending, spent basically all day Tuesday on it, 4 hours there, and then about 2 hours-ish. About 2 hours on Thursday. Ended up killing it on basically one of our first clean runs into P3 with no death. So it's honestly still probably, I think as we go through this, it'll be probably the hardest fight in this instance for this tier. And
it is certainly the highest pull count.
Yeah.
Although Sylvanas has the being a billion years long thing, so it might actually take longer.
That's true, yeah. But I mean, at least for Painsmith, it's the personal responsibility aspect of it. Just, I mean, we ended up having to drop someone and bring in, like, replace them just because, like, they literally couldn't live through the intermissions, which is, like, all you need. The DPS check isn't there anymore, so it's basically just, like, get 20 people to live through two intermissions and do enough, like, do a minimal damage to the boss and you'll kill it, so.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of where we are at. We spent last Sunday, after the podcast last week, we spent our evening going through Painsmith progression. We did rotation, so we had like one set of people in and we swapped a bunch of people out and put another set of people in because we knew we weren't killing it last week and we just wanted to see like who can do the intermission best. And so we went in with that kind of comp on Friday, and well, I don't know, between Sunday and Friday some people forgot how to do the intermission, I guess. It was still a good, really good raid night. We actually made it. We had a very good, like, made it to phase 3 pull.
Oh, nice.
That, like, we had probably 4 people dead. But that's still, like, approaching the point, you know, it's not, getting those last 4 people alive is important. But when you're playing, like, 4 shamans and have 2 B-reses to play with, like, you can deal with 6 deaths up to that point, in theory. Yeah. As long as they're all shaman and have their Ankh up.
Yeah.
But so I don't want to get my hopes up that we get the kill tonight. I think it's definitely possible if we do execute those intermissions cleanly.
Yeah.
But it's gonna be like, it might be early next week that we get it.
Yeah, we had 2 or 3, like I said, it was our first real clean pull into P3. We killed it, but before that we had probably 4 or 5 pulls into P3 and we're able to see at least 1 or 2 spike walls, which was helpful in terms of like, you have to, like in P3, the strat changes, instead of staying still, you charge the spike wall as the group, and then the chains target sort of, you know, move away perpendicular, like basically run away from the spike walls in their sort of same configuration. So,
yeah.
So I mean, now we got through that with about 2 hours left in our raid night and ended up killing Guardians in like 4 pulls.
Yeah.
Which is just, we wiped more to people not placing the bombs on the things than any other mechanic. For us, that was the hardest thing, was like making sure we charged up the whatever the core things are enough. Yeah. And then that, once we figured that out, it was a kill. I mean, it's like all the healing, like it's funny because my healers were like, the cooldowns don't line up. I'm like, look, like if we do the bombs right, you will have plenty of time for healing cooldowns, like it'll line up. And as soon as we did that, it was perfectly fine. Cause we ended up doing just 2 purgings each round. And at that point, it's literally 3 minutes, like the cooldowns line up where you basically have a 3 minute gap between like 1 and 3 and then 2 and 4 purging. So like the idea is, as long as you get all those charges and you get a maximum amount of time in each phase, like the charge phase and things like that, then you're fine. But yeah, that fight is honestly a joke. Like it's not enjoyable. It's not enjoyable from a healing perspective, because literally it's 5 minutes of just blasting. So it's just like,
yeah,
the movement's also with the soak. Like, so we do the immunity soaks. The movement's non-existent. It's like you literally plant you behind literally the boss. Sit there
and like you move out of the beam and that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, like that fight, literally like a 4 or 5 pull boss. Like, as long as you have healing cooldown set going into it and the immunity set up, you know, people just need to make sure they get the bombs in the right spots.
I'm actually kind of looking forward to it, because I'm going to be, so the way almost everybody does this is you have your tank take the auto attacks the whole time. Mm-hmm. And the other tank just taunts for the combo. And like you split the combo as normal, but then your one tank just takes auto attacks the whole time.
Yeah.
That's me. So I'm looking forward to that, partially because I actually made the Kyrian Call to Arms legendary.
Oh, really? Oh, nice.
Because I looked at the numbers that I was getting from Shard Passion, so I was like, if I get an extra Invoke Nia Zhao, like half an extra, like basically a full extra Invoke Nia Zhao every 4 minutes,
mm-hmm.
which is about what Call to Arms says, then I think Call to Arms will do more damage. There is some variance there, because if the extra Invoke Nia Zhao is crit, then it's like god tier.
Yeah.
Like if they get crits on their stomps, it's going to be amazing. On the other hand, if they don't crit at all, it's going to be probably worse. So it's like, it's Shard Passions is definitely the safer play, because it's just like super consistent value. There's so many damage events going out that it will average out on the single pull. Call of Arms, not so much, but we are way ahead on the damage check. So
gotcha.
I'm gonna fiddle around with it, and if I don't like it, then I will swap back. But
nice.
I decided I wanted to try it, because this is, I think, the only boss where it makes sense for that to happen.
That'd be good. Yeah, I mean, to be fair, like I feel like you could try almost anything on this boss, and it'll work, because it's the damage check isn't there, and it's fairly straightforward. So got through that, like I said, in like 4 or 5, maybe a half hour, 45 minutes. And we ended up basically pulling Fate Scribe. We got 4 or 5 pulls in on Fate Scribe just to sort of see the differences. Saw the intermission.
Yeah.
You know, saw basically got, I think we almost got it to like maybe 60% in terms of progression. 67%. It's honestly, again, like Fate Scribe with the whole just run in one direction piece. The hardest part was nobody knew what the graphic looked like for the, what was it?
For the other one.
Grim
the
Potent. Dark
Fate Portent. Or whatever it is. Grim Potent. That's it. Yes. Yeah. I actually did not know that mechanic existed until this week, because Fate Scribe, like, world first progression happened so fast that I missed all of it.
Yeah, so we didn't know what that looked. We didn't realize. So at first it was like, well, just if you get Grim Potent, jump in one of the circles. And then people were like, well, I have one that has a big...
specific one.
Yeah,
so that was the thing. Like, fuzzy inverted pyramid over the one that you have to soak. You only get to soak that one, and you have to soak that one or the raid dies.
Yeah. So once we figured that out, it ended up being a little bit easier. But yeah, the we got like maybe like 4 or 5 pulls on it. And then we actually went back and cleared heroic just to clear it, because we weren't going to kill Fate Scribe. We didn't really have, I mean, I don't know why we didn't spend the extra hour on it, but I think it was just because we had spent so much time on Painsmith that we needed those breaks. We just like cleared for a little bit. So ended up ending the night in heroic, which wasn't, I mean, we had already done Sylvanas. So it was like a quick, 45 minutes to clear like the other, what is it, 9 or 6 bosses?
Six bosses at that point, yeah.
Yeah. So, but yeah, that was our raidway. I mean, the Painsmith kill was really nice. I mean, honestly, when we got everybody alive at the end, it just sort of fell over. I don't think we even got the final trap set. Like, we killed it before like the room, before like the enraged spike. So,
Did you guys end up holding DPS or just burning?
So we held in, we did hold in P1 and P2. Yeah. Okay. P2 less so. P2 was like maybe half as, like maybe for like 10, 15 seconds. I think we would have been able to push before the final axe. So we held, took the final axe, then did the push. P1, we stopped for maybe like, honestly, like it seems like 60 seconds, but I think we could push it before even like right around the fourth axe, and we end up not waiting till the sixth axe for
cooldown. We weren't planning on holding DPS. We played around a little bit with holding in phase one, specifically to try to push him as he casts an axe on me.
Mm-hmm.
So that, because while he's doing that, you basically get an extra like 10 seconds to DPS the boss while he just sits there and throws the axe. And you can push him, you know, we had pulls where we pushed him down to 67%. Yep. Instead of 70.5, and that's, you know, 3% less that you have to do in phase two, which meant that we could skip a whole axe set in phase two. But people, it wasn't working, like it wasn't consistently getting us enough mileage that I don't think we're going to continue doing it. I think we're just going to like just blast, you know. We had pulls where we didn't stop DPS at all, and we just got him to like 68% before he actually got upstairs. I think honestly the most important thing for that is actually moving him to the far corner from where he from his platform.
And that's
the whole thing.
Yeah, that's our default tanking position. So for us it's fine. Like we basically tank him like front left corner.
Yeah.
In basically
that's what we do as well. But like I wasn't consistent in moving him after, like if we had a ball set.
Gotcha.
Then moved us into the other corner. Like moving him back before we transition so that he has to run across the platform for twice as long.
Gotcha. Yeah, we basically make it so that no one, like our raid group, very bad at like, they're very good at doing one thing the same way all the time. They're very bad at like rotate the room and you're still in the same spot, but the room is slightly different. So like for us, it was always easier just to always reset. So like our corners are the front left and back right.
Yeah.
So back right is basically P2, P3. We sit back there.
Yeah, that's where we
are. Front left is P1. So yeah, I mean, we ended up holding, and it's honestly more for cooldowns, like healer cooldowns than anything else. So for us, like it's more just me being lazy than anything else. Is like I didn't want to play.
We use any healer cooldowns in phase one.
We use a set just so that they go on cooldown. Because if we don't use them, then it's like it's basically we use so we get two traps every phase, and we basically have two sets of cooldowns. So our second trap group goes the one traps you get in P1.
We were getting two traps. Let me actually pull this up because I'm really curious now, because I think we are only getting one.
So we skipped on our kill. We skipped the second traps in P2. I don't know how. I don't know, spell queuing or something.
So on our best pull, we had a 22% pull on our last pull, actually, on Friday. And we did get two trap sets in phase two.
Yeah. So I set up the cooldowns just assuming two trap sets, but I think on our kill, we ended up not getting the second trap set in P2. I'll have to double check that while we're sort of talking here. But yeah, I mean, Painsmith, I think it's honestly, it's a really good boss. I think it's one of the frustrating boss because it's an individual responsibility one that I think makes you hate your, not hate, that's really strong, but makes you dislike some individuals in your raid group just because you're like,
yeah, we did,
just much live.
Much like you, we did end up benching some people because... Gotta do the intermission, man.
Do the intermission. Yeah, and it definitely sucks. It's not fun to do that, but at the same time, you're just like, if you can't, like, you just need to live. Like, you just need to live. So it's just like, if you can't live, you know, it's ugh. So, but yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, like, it's a good boss.
I'm really enjoying it.
I'm
having a great time.
I think even, like I said, I think the only problem I have is that the intermission, at least the first intermission, I think the second intermission having to do the unbreakable spike line, I probably would have started to hate just because the damage is so high there from the dot. I think,
raid, you know, regardless. Was wearing Bloodlink and tagging the balls in the intermission.
I talked about that with somebody, with one of my warlocks, and I was like, you should just roll blood set. Like, and never heal yourself, or we'll never have to heal you. So yeah, that would be awesome.
I actually should pull it up. Let's look on our kill pool. How much healing, or not kill pool, but you know, our best pool. How much healing did Bloodlink do?
Ridiculous. I actually don't know if we have any Bloodlink folks.
I mean, both your tanks are definitely running it, but it's unlikely that anybody else is. So Bloodlink was 7,000 HPS across the raid. Which, like, for context, the overall HPS for the point in the fight that this cuts off at was 50,000. So it is literally like 15% of the raid healing.
That's absolutely ridiculous. Yeah.
So
yeah, I think yeah, both our tanks have it, and then a hunter and one of our paladins does.
Yeah. Low key great for hunter because they have no defensives. They have turtle and that's it.
Yeah. That's crazy. But yeah, I mean, I would say like you get the kill. I think if you guys get a kill tonight, like, and you're gonna extend right the rest of the time.
We didn't reclear this week. We just started in on Painsmith on Friday, and we are extending until Sylvanas dies.
Nice. Yeah, that's. I mean, to be fair, we actually did the same thing. It was funny. Our raid leader was like, "Do you want to reclear?" Like, you put up like a. Like we were sort of talking about it
kind of thing.
Yeah. And like people were like giving their like yeses and nos. And I think like only one person really felt strongly about reclearing. It was more just from the perspective of like making the rest of the fights easier. Yeah. But I think it like every fight remaining is like the DPS check is minimal, like extra stamina on individuals. There's really no one shot mechanics left. Right. Yeah. In terms of like not having enough health. So,
I mean, my group is 244 equipped now from what we were running on Painsmith. And that's like plenty enough. Plus, everybody's got a domination set of some kind on. Like, we're going to be.
Yeah. I think a couple. Yeah. We're also at 244 actually for our Painsmith kill. Yeah. So, I mean, I think everybody at least has a set. I don't think everybody has 5 socket gems, but. I mean, the extra two aren't, I don't think, massive. So yeah. Anything else on the progression side for you? I think I guess just moving forward, like we're going to extend probably this week, hopefully get Fate Scribe NKT. It's funny. I was doing healing cooldowns for KT. And it's literally like 1 minute, use everything, 4 minute, use everything, 7 minute, use everything. Because that's literally the only time you're going to get spikes, the explosion. So it's just like,
yeah.
Hopefully it's more exciting than that, but
the guy we have doing our healing CDs is going to be really happy about how easy KT is.
Yeah. As long as the DPS, as long as like from a DPS perspective, you can sort of hold and do that whole thing, then it should be, hopefully pretty easy. Like maybe like a 20, 30 pull boss. So we'll see. Fate Scribe seems actually pretty easy too. It's just going to get everybody
a lot of, can people do the runes?
Yeah. Yeah, so I think we're going to end up using, like before we used to just YOLO in terms of like if you got an affinity, you just called, hey, I'm getting, like basically we numbered them like from the middle. So the middle one's 1 through 6, I think.
Have you seen the car that's got all the rings numbered and like lights up with the one that you're assigned to?
I have not, but if maybe I'll steal that.
I will link that to you.
Yeah, that seems really nice.
Because it's super cool.
That seems really cool. Yeah, because... that'll be the only thing I think we end up wiping too. The damage isn't that bad. The soaks we figured out. Now that people realize what the graphic looks like. And yeah. So hopefully that's a kill on Tuesday this week for us. And then we can, we'll go in for, KT. Maybe we'd be 2 kills this week. It'd be awesome. So
yeah. Yeah.
Hopefully you get
painted. I'd be very happy. Like super, super happy. I don't want to, again, I don't want to get my hopes up because I do think it's entirely reasonable for us to not kill Painsmith until Friday.
Yeah,
but I would be super happy if we got Painsmith and Guardian down tonight.
Yeah, I would say as long like if you get Painsmith with even maybe 30 minutes left in your night, like it's like
the thing is trash, right? You got to go and you got to do all the trash going to Guardian. So it really like if we have 30 minutes on Guardian, I think it's pretty likely. If we just have 30 minutes left in raid, that's gonna be 20 minutes of trash and 10 minutes on Guardian.
It'd be a little much, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if you have everything nailed down.
No, we could YOLO into a one shot.
like I said, the hardest part for us was getting bombs on the things. Like, and if your guild is good at that, then it's a kill.
We'll get it.
Easy kill. So cool. All right. Well, then let's move into a little week in review stuff. There's actually a lot happened this week. I mean,
I was looking surprisingly. At it.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it sort of we can sort of group like a couple of these together in one, but we'll start with sort of hot fixes and go from there. So a lot of hot fixes came in with sort of the reset this week. A couple of interesting ones. So I think we'll talk a little bit about the whole group finder situation in a bit, but they did make some updates to a couple of bosses and some dungeons. So the big one, I guess, on Fate Scribe is you can no longer get the Runic Affinity or Grim Potent. Portent, I guess, which is the mythic sort of orb ability we talked about. If you have Forborn's Reveries, which is sort of the cheat death where you stay alive for like 10 seconds.
Right. So if you are basically a dead man walking. Mm-hmm. You cannot get targeted by these mechanics, which this is not the first time they've done it. They did it on, I want to say Stone Legion Generals as well.
Oh, yeah.
Where if you had Forgeborn, it would not target you with certain abilities. If you had Forgeborn active, just having the Soulbind, you can still get targeted. But if you are currently in between, like, getting hit by an ability that killed you and actually dying to Forgeborn running out, it will not target you.
Yeah, which is helpful because that's just a wipe on the raid at that point, right?
Yeah.
Maybe not the Runic Affinity, but at least
for the Grim Portent actually does just kill you.
Yeah.
If one person doesn't get their soak.
Yeah, so that was seems like a very sort of good change. Slightly overlooked, but cool that they've got that in there. The other thing that went live, of course, was we talked a little bit about this last week, which was the Salt winning Crescents and then the Deathbound Charge. The conduit upgrades. They basically now they pushed live the hotfix that they will now only give you upgrades to or start by giving you upgrades to your spec specific conduits. First, and then once you have all the spec specific ones, they will then branch out to, I think it's like random other, or no, sorry. If you have all the spec specific upgrades, nothing actually happens. You just get the item back.
You get a message that says, you know, you have nothing left to learn.
Yeah.
And then you have to swap. I think it's just swapping loot specs. You might have to actually swap specs, but one of the two in order to get one of the other conduits. Which actually is way better than I was expecting it to be. I was expecting it to do the thing where it's like, you know, hey, you have all of your, you know, 239 Brewmaster conduits. Here's a 239 Windwalker conduit.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can then target even specs beyond once you fill out your main spec, right? Which is really cool. And it works well. I mean, I got lucky.
From day one. Yeah.
Yeah. It does. It will upgrade to any sort of common conduits. So like finesse, endurance ones that are common. Which is
kind of annoying. There are a bunch of those.
Yeah.
It feels kind of bad that, like, I wish there were fewer conduits just because of how they did this upgrade system, right? Like, this upgrade system is super, like, just bad. It's just bad.
Yeah, but so, I mean, it's
better now.
It's, slightly better now. I got lucky. I got two Venthyr, the Imbued, what is it? Imbued Reflections, I think?
Yeah,
the Venthyr specific ones got that upgraded twice. So that's like 239 maybe, or what's the one after that? 240 252? Something?
It goes, I thought it went straight from 239 to 252.
Oh, then it's 239. Yeah, I thought there might have been an interim one. So got that upgraded, which is awesome. Huge fan about that. So that's, again, that was a change we talked about last week. It's now live, so it's working well.
Which I have been doing some number crunching, figuring out how much time I would have to spend in Gorthia, because I'm still not tier 6 yet, for the record. Neither am I. Like, halfway through tier 4. So I was like, how many days will I have to put into doing Gorthia to get tier 6 and get the rest of the conduits that way versus just doing Torghast once a week for the next several weeks and getting one conduit per week like that. And I was like, well, it's going to take me like 8 weeks to guarantee that I get my best, my only conduit that I care about to 252 using Torghast.
Yeah.
I can get to tier 6 in less than 8 weeks, I hope.
It's so I will tell you the Korthia, like, I don't do it, so I just do Korthia dailies. I should probably do more, but for me, it's literally, it's only like 150 to 200 rep a day.
Yeah, you got to do the rares.
Which is just so like much.
Just do the rares. Like, you don't even have to actually do that many to make it worthwhile. Just like every time you see a rare this up, drop whatever you're doing and go and do it. And there are some that are harder to get than others, like the teleporters are only up every 50 minutes or something like that. Mm-hmm. So if you see a teleporter pop up, like, just drop everything and go and do it because you're not seeing it again.
Gotcha.
Unless you're spending over an hour in Gorthia.
Yeah, that's gonna be my struggle, is because like I can do the dailies, but it's the rep grind is rough. So it averages out. I think I'm only doing like maybe 800 to 1,000 a week, because you get a bunch like with the
quests.
Yeah. So, but in any event, so that means I'm luckily.
I mean, if you're doing that, then just do Torghast, man. Like, don't even worry about it. Just do Torghast.
Yeah.
I'm trying to do like, I don't know, 500 a day.
Okay.
Which is fairly reasonable. And that will have me at tier 6 in like 2 or 3 weeks.
I guess. If you do 500 a day, because tier six is 16,000, right?
Right. So that's actually, wait, 16,000. That is 32 days. That is 4 weeks by itself.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah, it's all. So to and to be fair, I think the you only get three like items, like those like rare, there's like rare items you can. I don't know if you've done all the different like rare items.
I was so demotivated when I hit tier four because I was like, okay, I hit tier four. This means I now get another set of like free rep from the upgrade things.
Yeah,
I did those at tier one because they just require that you go into the rift, and so I did those week one with the guild, and it was like, oh, fuck.
So I also
the tier five ones actually require tier five to get.
Yeah.
So I have not done those, but yeah, it's rough.
Yeah, that was the one I watched. It was funny. I was watching a THD stream when they were going through after I'd done all that week one, because I basically was like, I want the meta achievement for Korthia because I like the hand mount. So like, I was very into like getting everything, getting ahead of what I can. And I watched him like talk about holding all that stuff because it's easy rep from tier five to six. I was like, God. Damn it. Like, I'm screwed now. So I ended up just, I mean,
if it makes you feel any better, it's actually not that, it's not different.
Yeah.
It's just not different. There's no like multiplier on your rep when you hit tier five or anything.
Yeah. So. It would make tier five feel better. It would be like more of a feel thing versus a, than actually. But yeah. So I guess on the Korthia grind stuff, those deathbound shards, I guess, now also drop more frequently from the adamant vaults, which is the Torghast thing. I don't know if I noticed. I'm
not sure what they mean by that, because I did adamant vaults twice this week and only got one, same as normal. But I got it on my first run. So what I'm thinking is now basically it means you can only do one run and you'll still get your deathbound shard.
Yeah. That's true. I don't know if I got one this week or not from Torghast. Forget.
Oh, pro tip, if you're doing Torghast, pro tip, just make, it doesn't matter what the eye level is, make the Touch of Death ring. Just make it. I don't care what your spec is, like your whatever other legendary you're using is not as good as that ring.
Okay.
Because you need then two common powers to have a 0 second cooldown on Touch of Death.
Oh, okay.
It is so incredibly easy to hit that. And there's a bunch of other like powers that go into that really, really well. There's the one that makes your Fort Brew give you an extra 5% health for every time you've used Touch of Death. One of my runs this week, used Fort Brew and was at 1.2 million health.
That's awesome.
And just Touch of Death the boss.
Yeah. That's hilarious. That's hilarious. That's a good tip. Well, speaking of getting legendary powers like the Touch of Death ring for Torghast, right? They did add Chronicles of Lost Memories, which is like the item that lets you learn a legendary power you don't know yet, to the catalog research to the vendor when you at least reach tier three.
What this does is it means basically that you have a way of getting legendary powers that require doing Castle Nathria.
Yeah.
What they should have done is they should have just added those legendary powers to Sanctum.
That would have alleviated. Yeah. The same similar boss, like you could have put, what was it? The Tear of Mourning was on KT. So you could, or was on Sludge Fist. So you could have put it on like KT or Fate Scribe, right?
Yeah. Then again, I can actually buy like 12 of those things right now.
So much research.
I have stored up, but I want to save those for conduits, right?
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah, so I mean that'll be that. That's one nice thing they did add. So now you can still get those powers from, like you said, from Nathria, and assuming like any other place where you don't want to do that content, you at least have to do the current content, which of course is Korthia to get those. So, so that sort of Chronicle Lost Memories has been added. I guess the only other final thing is they increased the amount of Korthite crystals that drop, which on my server caused that market to tank uncontrollably.
Yeah.
And to the tune of like they used to be about 2 to 3K each. They are now 800 gold each.
Yeah.
So
should reduce the cost of rank 5 and 6 legendaries a little bit, but honestly, the Korthite crystals are a complete joke in terms of cost compared to just the raw mats requirement of reaching a rank 4 legendary.
Yeah.
That's still the key cost. So you're not going to see legendaries suddenly being, half the price. they're going to be like two thirds the price that they were maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they're still going to be really expensive.
Yeah. Yeah. So somewhat of a slight change, but yeah, quartzite crystals. Now I no longer get as much gold as I used to selling them. Slightly upsetting.
Yeah.
I guess the only final sort of hotfix here in terms of hotfixes from last week, which is, I didn't realize this was happening, but apparently for Shard of Zed, so this is the shard that essentially puts the, whenever you, like your sort this of, whenever you heal someone, you put an unholy aura on a target. And basically that unholy aura would drain health from nearby enemies. And it's affected by versatility. Previously to this hotfix, it was affected by the target's versatility. So if your target had a high amount of versatility, it would increase the drain, basically aura.
It was actually impacted by more than just their versatility. It was any modifiers they had that would modify the damage of it. So for example, it deals shadow damage. Guess which class has a mastery that increases shadow damage?
Oh, Shadow Priest, right?
Unholy DK.
Oh, right.
So even better, Unholy DK has almost no helpful abilities to cast. So they could actually very consistently get it on their pet. So they could like use a friendly ability, use Death Coil or something like that to get it on their pet. And it would also benefit from the like modifiers that increase their pet damage. So they would have their pet do like their whatever the thing they do where their pet gets really big and smashy,
mm-hmm.
and have that Shard of Zed do really insane damage.
Jeez, I didn't realize it worked that way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So
that's a bit ridiculous.
Yeah. If it were just target versatility, I don't think they would have bothered changing it. But this is something else.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So yeah, so they made it sounds like they made a couple of changes also to the fact that it now is affected by the caster's versatility.
Yeah.
Not just the targets. So but yeah, that's crazy. I didn't realize that worked like that with old Unholy DKs.
Panini was doing some theory crafting of that, trying to figure out how that worked. He's a blood DK main right now. So he's actually playing DK, but he was looking at it and going to the DKs on both of our teams like, should do this.
yeah. That seems ridiculous.
There's a bunch of free value.
Awesome. Yeah.
They also one of the other things they've changed, I think this was technically last week, but we didn't mention it, Bloodlink. Okay. They made it so more abilities trigger it, and it is, quote, more responsive to damage done to new targets before moving.
Okay.
Which basically means that if you press Spinning Crane Kick, you get to watch the Bloodlink debuff just move around all the targets you're hitting in a circle. It's just round and around. You don't lose ticks. It still does the same damage. It's just like moving constantly, which is kind of distracting. But importantly, this does mean that for other classes, almost every ability now applies it. Previously, Vengeance Demon Hunters in particular had this really bad. They had two abilities that applied it. Fiery Brand and Shear. Mm-hmm. And most of them talent out of Shear.
Okay.
Yeah, so that was kind of rough. So now basically every ability is going to apply it. That is great for them. No real change for Monks, because every ability we have already applied it. So, yeah.
Interesting. Well, that's good. Well, I mean, like, so awesome changes there, and then awesome changes, I guess, on the first side. Well, maybe not awesome changes, sort of nerfs Zed a little bit for Unholy, it sounds like. But cool. I guess that's it from I guess the last week hotfixes perspective. Moving forward to the largest part of the announcements, right, that we'll have is that Blizzard basically went through and announced a bunch of, I guess, customization updates coming in.
They announced a lot of cosmetics, yeah.
Yeah, 915, right? So I guess I'll read through a couple of these and we can sort of look at what they've got. So they've added some additional customizations in terms of like face, hairstyles, things like that to Nightborne and Lightforged Draenei. So I think there's now like you'll get like new hair, facial features, you know, accessories. So if you're into sort of that sort of appearance customization stuff, that's all coming in 915. They've also added some specific things to some specific races also. So you've got ear size options for Void Elves. I guess you could change the size of ears. I've never been a Void Elf, so I don't know. But apparently you can change the ear sizes
of
those.
I think other elves you can, but void elves you couldn't.
Okay. So they've updated that. You've got new travel forms for druids, which I don't know if they've actually announced what those forms are, but...
Right. I don't think they have.
But... Yeah, but I think currently druids have, you know, their typical racial version, right? Like the stag for Tauren and trolls for the... Or I guess it's Tauren, trolls, night elves, and worgen, which are the original druids. And then the new allied races have their own version of the travel form. I think the coolest one is, of course, Dandelari trolls, which have dinosaurs as their travel form. And then there's two, what are they called? Not runes, not relics.
Glyphs.
Sorry, I was going to get it.
Yeah.
That let you go to, let you travel form or let you change that into a cheetah or doe. So there'll be more druid travel forms other than the three they get already, which is cool. They're adding a bunch of shapeshifts for Night Fae. So I think you can also shapeshift into some critters, like squirrels or some small item or smaller shapes, right? And I think they've also, it looks like they're also adding the option to basically randomize what you shapeshift into.
Right. Which so is if you cool. collected a bunch of different shapeshifts, now you can do random like you can with mounts.
Yeah, which is fun. And then there's new toys coming, which I'm assuming when they say customization, these toys will change your appearance in some way.
Yeah. Maybe we'll finally get a toy version of the coin that people use to swap appearances that doesn't have a bajillion year cooldown.
maybe. But
you have to hoard coins from the Halloween event.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, or I guess to be fair, I think the only toy that I use that changes my appearance is like the one that turns you into boss models. So we'll drop that guy.
I actually don't like that one.
Really? I love it.
Some of it is like I have text boxes on above people's heads, and some of those bosses have really big voice like text boxes. So like there's one of them, I don't remember which one, where I think it's actually KT from Kel'thas from Tempest Keep that has one that's just like boom on my screen. Okay, dude.
It's great too because they yell at mid fight too.
Yes. Yeah, it's so good.
So the only reason I like that one is because I always like to guess what boss I get turned into. I'm really bad at it because I don't know boss voice lines at all.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, so tons of customization options coming.
Also, actually, the other thing this does is this is the first we've heard about 915, right?
It is. Yeah, it is.
Like, obviously, we knew there was going to be one, but this is the first we've heard of it. I don't think they said anything about the timeline for it in this post.
No.
But that they are announcing things about it maybe sooner than we might have expected.
Yeah, I think it's weird that I look at this as sort of potentially a new way of Blizzard communicating to players. Like, I'm wondering if this is... I hate to read between the lines, so maybe they would have done this regardless of sort of the past couple months and sort of the feedback and the struggles and the quote-unquote mass exodus you'll hear a lot of people talk about, right? But I think this is cool that this type of communication is coming, because this not only was it this post, right, but it's the Deathbound Shard post too, where they sort of talked about, okay, this is how the system's going to work when you do conduit upgrades and when they announce that. So I for one am, I mean, yeah, number one, first post on 9.5, 9.15, sorry. I think it's fun. I think it's hopefully a way they'll communicate in the future. But I don't know if it really means it's soon, right?
Yeah. Okay. That's fair.
Because like I think the idea for me is that whenever they say they're putting stuff up on PTR, it's about a 3-month lead time to when we'll actually see that live. And I think when did Sanctum drop? I think it's too soon in my mind. Sanctum
dropped. So the patch came out at the beginning of July.
And yeah.
And not shortly after.
So I was thinking like a six, like I feel like patch cycles work well as 6-month patch cycles. So like,
I think their patch cycles are too infrequent.
Well, yeah.
I think they do need to like more smaller patches.
Yeah. Which I guess maybe they just do a customization patch. Right. And maybe that's what 9.5 generally is. And then if that's the case, then, you know, this goes up like, sooner rather than later.
Give me a 9.15 and a 9.18 and, you know, that's then true. A 9.2.
Go to the old vanilla model where you get like a patch every like 2-3 months. So
yeah, like I think that would be good. That.
I'd be down for that. Another out of this sort of scheduled like
yeah, and they would have to maybe do a little bit of managing expectations because we have been so long in this like every patch is huge.
Yeah, every like .1.2 is like your content patch, and then .1.5 is your like tweak patch, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, they definitely have to change the messaging in terms of how they do it. But no, I'd agree. Yeah, maybe it's just 9.15 is in like the next 2 months, and it's nothing but these customizations, like an art updater. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which I would be fine. Yeah. To be fair, I'd be fine with that.
Yeah.
No, but cool. But yeah, first news on it. It seems like it's a lot of like customization options. Which, if you're into that, cool. I mean, more stuff for you guys. Awesome. All right. So I guess moving on to the next piece is, I don't know if we talked about this. I feel like we might have, but they did. Do you think we did? We talked about the Wicked Vault nerf?
I don't think we did.
So there was a undocumented nerf to a Halls of Atonement ability, Wicked Vault, which is from the Obliterators, which are sort of towards, I guess, the start of the instance, right? Yeah. Basically, they've increased the cast time from 2 seconds to one, or sorry, from 1.5 seconds to 2 seconds. So they basically added, you know, half a second on the cast time. And this ability, I know this ability well because it's whenever it's not interrupted, my tank gets absolutely cleaved. So it hits very hard, which is funny because they did an update to increase its damage at the start of the patch. So in 9.1 drop, they increased the damage of this ability. And now they've decreased the cast time. So it still hits very hard, but seems to be a little bit more manageable in terms of like making sure you can get.
This is functionally like if your group is not kicking, this is a 33% damage per second nerf to the ability because, you know, they get to cast 33% fewer of them in the same amount of time because the cast time is longer.
Yep.
It also makes it easier to kick, which I think is the most important thing because like, your high-end teams doesn't matter, they could kick it anyway, but your pugs now are going to have an easier time kicking this ability.
Yeah.
It doesn't make it, like, one-shot your tank any less, though. So.
That is true.
Which, I mean, in a 15, it's not going to one-shot your tank, even on Fortified. Fortified Raging, maybe. But
It'll be close, yeah, if they don't have anything up. But yeah, so, nice little undocumented nerf to Wicked Bolts in Halls of Atonement. All right, moving on to probably one of my favorite changes that's come in last week. Basically, characters must now be level 60 to list Mythic Plus dungeons or Shadowland raid groups in the group finder.
This is directed at people posting sales listings in the group finder. I have not actually checked the group finder since this went live to see what it looks like now. I imagine there will be far fewer like sales listings because now you have to actually use a level 60 character to do it.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, it is there are still sale postings, so
yeah,
it didn't completely eliminate them, but yeah, it seems like there's a lot less. I was in Group Finder this week just trying to finish off. I need like one more tyrannical dungeon or two more tyrannical dungeons, so just trying to quickly finish those off this week. But yeah, I mean, it's gotta be level 60 now. It just means that, I mean, they'll just level a character and, you know, hopefully it slows down.
I mean, there's one, posting sales in the group finder is a bannable offense.
Yep.
So being able to like just make another account and do a level one and do that meant that there was very little friction to making another character and doing it. Now that you have to go through the effort, even if you buy a boost, for one thing, buying a boost is just extra time. Like you can't just buy the base game and do it. You have to buy the base game, you have to buy Shadowlands, and you have to use a boost to get to 50 and level to 60, like that's way more time than just buying another copy of the base game.
Exactly.
And making level one and doing it. Because you already can't, I don't think trial accounts can list stuff in the group finder. They have a bunch of restrictions, like they can't do auctions, they can't do, they can't post in general, they can't like invite
like gold caps too, yeah.
Small gold caps, all that kind of stuff. I'm pretty sure not being able to list things in the group finder is one of those restrictions. So, yeah, this is, I am hopeful that this will help with the group finder spam, because even if someone like my guild does sales, we do sales, I think sales are bad for the game, but as long as they're in the game, we're going to be like, I'm not going to say no to 250,000 gold every week.
Yeah.
This is something I am very happy about though, because trying to do anything with the group finder recently has been awful. I was trying to get Painsmith normal kills on my monk because the weapon is so good, I will use a normal one. And there's so many sales listings. And especially with the way that they changed the group finder to make it so that like search and filter add-ons don't work very well with it. At times it was just not possible for me to see if there was a Painsmith group up because there were so many sales listings.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, hopefully it's a good change. I think you're still see sales in the group finder, but it should be, you know, just less in general. Yeah. Which will be good. So cool. So we've got MDI season 2 time trials are ongoing, this weekend. Or actually I think it's until Tuesday, at reset time, right around reset time, August 24th. So, basically this is where you've got sort of the time trials, open time trials. It's the top 24 teams, from a time trial perspective, that are trying to push. It's the Halls of Atonement and the other side. So basically you push those up to, a maximum of, 21, and then it's the best time from there. So it's probably a combination of like key level. So if 24 teams don't push a 21, it basically goes down to the fastest 20 from there. Time trial started. It's interesting. Just a couple interesting points. I think we've got, you know, JB. So some of the names that sort of I saw popping up. I know that for the Echo team, Now is in tanking this season. So he's taking a little bit of a break, primarily because I think he just wants a break. So they'll have a new tank when the Echo team. Complexity Limit sort of started their own team. It's like JB and basically four people from Complexity Limit. So JB Healing, you know, it's like I'm Fired Up's in there. Scott is the tank from former Fat Shark, yes, but now Limit. So that team will be in there. They'll be, you know, probably very good. And then of course you got just some of the other the push teams. So
I wanna pull up these times because I know we're actually getting kind of long in time.
Yeah.
What the heck are these times? Okay, so 20 minute the other side. Okay, I can understand like top team in the world doing a 21. Okay, they can do it 20 minutes. I can understand that. This is the JB team that you know you were talking about.
Yep.
12 minutes 55 seconds for 21 Halls of Atonement. What the actual fuck? Like,
yeah.
What in the world are they doing to this dungeon?
Absolutely breaking it. Absolutely breaking it. Yeah, I don't know how. It just seems absolutely ridiculous.
And it's not even just like, oh, the top team has it at 12 minutes. Like everybody's on their 15 minutes, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so you've got you've got like the Nerf team with like JPC and Ellesmere and those guys. Yeah, you've got Mara Azalea, the Echo team there.
I don't think the Echo team or the Complexity Limit team has actually even attempted.
Yeah, I don't see them yet. On the list anywhere, yeah.
So
but yeah, it's crazy the speed that these guys are going in this dungeon. So
yeah.
But yeah, 12, like how do you even pull a 12 minute? Oh,
so Halls is tyrannical. Chat is pointing out Halls is tyrannical, which means that they can pull bigger on the trash.
That's true.
But even like a 21 tyrannical boss, how do you like those are like 2.5 minutes long each, two and a half minutes easily.
Yeah.
Even with like very good DPS, like I don't know what I guess they're doing Venthyr things, like they're bringing in. Maybe all the gargoyles on the first boss or something like that, you know, everyone
trying to collect
their own gargoyle, and they just have five six gargoyles on the first boss, and it makes it like a 30 second fight or something. I don't know.
Yeah, that's crazy. But yeah, I can't wait. I wish that they would stream some of that, or at least we get some video of that, because
I imagine we will see during the first few rounds of the MDI what exactly is going on with those dungeons.
But yeah, so that's time trials have started. So I think it's there's time trials this week, and then next week I think starts the actual event. So like they're doing, this is like the new format where they break the top 24 teams into three groups, and those three groups basically compete in consecutive weekends. with like the top two teams going forward to the global finals. And then there's one like last chance tournament at the end for any team that didn't make it directly into the global finals. So
yeah.
So yeah, that'll be fun group stage stuff coming in. So yeah, it'll be fun to see how they break these dungeons, particularly this will be the first season two tournament, right? So
yeah,
it'll be interesting to see like, yeah, I think somebody in chat mentioned like what tormentors they're skipping, how they're doing it, things like that. So
yeah.
All right, cool. All right, I know we're getting super long. So one final this week update before we get into the lore stuff is Empowered Conduits are now coming. So basically for the remainder of your renowned upgrades, each week you'll get the next Empowered Conduit for each of your soul binds. So I guess if you have three soul binds, they'll sort of rotate when they come in. But each renowned level will give you one additional Empowered Conduit starting from the top of the tree and working your way down. And basically, a power conduit just means that each slot, once it's empowered, adds two ranks, which essentially is about 25-ish item level, 26-ish item level, to whatever conduit you have slotted in there. So yeah. A 252 becomes a 278. 239 would become a 265. So essentially, just adds 26 item level to whatever conduit you have in there, which essentially means you should, particularly for potency ones or your good conduits, slot them in earlier in your tree so they become empowered sooner.
Yeah. Brewmaster is in kind of an awkward spot with at least Kyrian Brewmaster, because in order to use Mechanicos first empowered conduit row with the only conduit that we care about, you have to take the auto file, which means like your file of strength gets used automatically when you are at 30% health. Which is not usually, like, it's not as bad now as it was last year, where last year you were using it to dispel debuffs.
Yep.
This year you're not doing that as much, or basically at all, really. So it's not as big of a deal, but it's still, like, I don't want it used automatically. Like.
Yeah.
Why?
You want that agency
why? Over there. Yeah. It's so, like, it's actively bad. It sucks. I'm still undecided as to whether I'm actually going to swap my conduits around to take advantage of that or not for Mythic, because it basically just means that I can't use my file myself. Like, it's going to get triggered just randomly throughout the fight, and there's nothing I can do about it.
Yeah.
On the other hand, basically everything on Painsmith either doesn't put me to 30% or triggers a cheat death. So
yeah, there's not an in between there for that.
Yeah,
for
sure. So I may use it on Painsmith just because, and then turn it off for, or maybe I'll leave it on for Guardian. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's just, I don't know. It's kind of a really bad, like, anti-choice. It's, do you take this actively bad thing to get a minor DPS gain or not? I mean, that is kind of the quintessential tank decision making right there. Do you use the defensive trinket or the offensive trinket?
Exactly.
But yeah,
for me, luckily it's very, very easy. I just keep my soul binds the way they are and just slowly gain more ranks. So
yeah. In a couple weeks it gets a lot easier, because then you can just put your invoked Nezahr conduit in the second set of empowered potency slots, and then you're fine.
Yeah, then it's all good. Yeah,
can't do that yet though.
Fair enough. Yeah, that'll be good. It's funny, I've a bunch of people in my guild did not realize what was happening, so yeah. They were very upset having to, like, because they just slotted conduits in however, and they were very upset, like, being out of conduit energy to have to, like, redo how everything works. Yeah,
it's funny. So this is one thing where it would have been great if they had just removed conduit energy in 9.1, because this just reminded everybody how much they hate conduit energy.
Exactly. Yeah. Or if they were a little bit more forthcoming, like with this, like when the system was releasing, which I guess if you read about it, you're fine. But like, this is one of those like passive bonuses that I don't think got talked about too much. So,
yeah. I mean, for a lot of the high end guilds, it's after their progression by a lot. Like, Hall of Fame is already closed for Horde before you even got your first empowered conduit, right?
Yeah.
So, it's unclear, it was not clear that they would get value from it. So why would they be discussing it? So then that really falls on, you know, us to be discussing it as people that are in lower ranked guilds that still get value from it. But then for us, it's like, 10 weeks into the patch, right?
Exactly, yeah.
We have other things to worry about.
Then empowered conduit. So yeah, it is what it is, but they're being empowered now. So that'll be sort of the only real stuff from Renowned for the rest of the, I think WoW had posted that you'll finish off your Renowned grind if you do it every week in like mid-October is when the end date is now, since you'll get two a week from now until that point. So, but yeah, I think that's it for topic. That was a very busy week, actually.
Yeah.
Very busy week. So cool. So I guess we'll shift gears a little bit here and talk a little bit about the some lore stuff, if you want.
Let's do lore.
Okay, cool. So I think the one lore thing that I actually wanted to talk about this week, and I put two on the list, so we don't have to talk about the second piece if we don't get too much into it. But the one thing I wanted to talk about was so at the end of the campaign last week, you essentially, you know, it was sort of the final cutscene you sort of got was like the discussion between Sylvanas and Anduin as, you know, Anduin was leaving to follow the Jailer, sort of wrapped up the 9.1 story. And you're left with basically like the new, I don't know if they're the new leads, but like the new people who represent each covenant now in Korthia speaking to like their counterparts, right? So the Morgraine, father-son duo talking to each other, you know, Uther and Jaina talking to each other. I forget the other ones off the top of my head. But in any event, so each one's having their own sort of conversation between the two.
Yeah.
And the one I wanted to focus on was actually Uther and Jaina's, because I think it gives a pretty good insight into what happens when Frostmourne steals, you know, a portion of your soul or your whole, like basically steals a portion of your soul, right? Because I think what a lot of people thought up until this point, this is sort of, I think, the first glimpse in how Blizzard thinks this works, right? The story team thinks this works, is that a lot of times people thought, well, if Frostmourne took that from you, you lost that part of you. And when you were given it back, you basically became whole again. And the idea was, is that that's not how it worked. It was more of like Frostmourne froze that portion of like your consciousness or portion of your soul in time, and your body continued moving forward, right? And then when it thawed, then you sort of got that portion of your soul back and were able to like reflect on what you've done. Because I guess the idea is, and what people were worried about was that with Sylvanas getting part of her soul back, she's now immediately good again. And that's how they sort of write her back into being a good guy. And what this sort of Uther's sort of conversation with Jaina about this is, it's almost like, you know, while Sylvanas is there's not really a good or bad, she doesn't sort of all of a sudden become good now. It sort of shows that like she's going to have some very, I guess, some internal struggles, like that portion of her soul becoming now whole again, or I guess unfrozen, I guess would be the right way to say.
So not going to lie, I think the thawed, like frozen thawed thing is kind of dumb.
I do. I also think it's dumb, but I think it's an interesting way to describe, like, to not just basically say, oh, your soul is back, you're whole again, you're yourself, like, right?
Because obviously, Frostmourne has the ice theme. So in the context of Frostmourne, it makes sense. But what about these other Mournblades that they've been talking about for the other parts of this expansion? Do they freeze your soul? Like, is Anduin's Mournblade, like...
Yeah, I mean, I would assume they work very similarly, right? In terms of like when you steal a portion or, you know, a portion of that person's soul, it sort of just puts it on, I'm going to say puts it on ice, but it sort of just does that whole like, I guess you have to use the word frozen, God. But it sort of like just like stops time for that portion of your consciousness or your soul, and then everything else sort of continues on, right? Yeah. And you don't have that portion of your like, soul or whatever, like your internal sort of monologue to rely on anymore. But yeah, it is sort of on, I think it's a little on the nose in terms of like it's frozen.
Yes.
But I think it's a cool way of describing what has happened in terms of like not only Sylvanas, I think, is the big character this is impacted by, but even like Uther, and you would assume eventually Arthas, right? Like you would assume eventually there's something that comes from that. And I think that's, to be fair, possibly what they're building towards, which would be an interesting way. Like, as much as I hate Sylvanas in terms of character, as much as I wish we would have killed her, it now sets up for potentially an interesting conversation between her and Arthas, right? Where it's now like a fully Like, Sylvanas has made all these choices. Her soul is now whole again. She's like, sort of, I don't know, probably now wrestling with internal demons in terms of like, hey, now my like human side is back, ready. Like, sort of like, now sort of I'm able to hear them again in terms of what I've done over the past like 5 or 6 years of this story. And yeah, getting her like to meet Arthas, I think will be pretty interesting. And also it makes it so that she's not going to avoid accountability, right? Like, yeah. That I think was the biggest thing in terms of like,
yeah,
once she was whole again, it's like, now she's good Sylvanas instead of like crazy Sylvanas, because she has that part of her soul back. But it's the way they describe it, it's more of just like, you still make the same choices, you just make them without that portion of like your conscious, or like, you could use the word soul, but like that portion of your consciousness, like providing feedback to you in terms of, yeah, like, is this the best idea or not?
It's basically, basically, to be even more on the nose, it's like, you know, the angel and devil on your shoulder. It's like Frostborn just took the angel.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you only make bad choices. You're in sort of an echo chamber of like, yeah, here's like,
it's
the,
just, it's just the devil on your shoulder.
Yeah.
All day, yeah, long.
Sort of whispering in your ear. So, yeah. So, I mean, that was, it was very interesting. Particularly like Uther saying, hey, you'd assume Sylvanas goes through the same thing in terms of like reflecting on the choices she's made. But yeah, I don't think it changes any of it. It just sort of, you know, it might humanize her character a bit, as much as I hate to say it, right? Maybe she'll be a little bit more compassionate, or yeah, understanding. So, but yeah, I thought that was, it was a cool way. I think it's the first time they've ever really described what Frostmourne does. I think up to this point, it was always like, it just steals souls. So yeah, you lose it for a while, but it seems like it's more of just it, you probably realize it's there, you just can't utilize like that portion of your consciousness, right, as it gets, yeah, stolen. So, which honestly makes the, it's, it makes the cutscene a little weirder, not only here but even the ICC cutscene when after you kill Arthas
and he's got his like father's soul there.
Yeah, the whole soul speaks, like, so it's just,
it's not consistent, I will say. Yeah, it's just not consistent. It is a retcon.
Yeah,
it's the kind of thing where I don't think it made sense. I don't think it makes sense for them to do this kind of retcon. Like, I will have to wait and see what the payoff from it is. But right, they could have written, you know, Sylvanas grappling with the decisions that she's made without having to rewrite how Frostmourne works.
Yeah, or at least write it. Rewrite it, or just like, try and write it in a way that aligns to the previous story beats that have hit on when Frostmourne does something.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Now that I did. So to be fair, I thought about this. I was thinking more of the soul swirl that comes out of the Frostmourne when they break, yeah, it. I didn't even think about his father speaking to him. That, yeah, that makes, yeah, even less sense. Yeah, in terms of that. So interesting. But yeah, I mean, that's the cutscene. So I think it just sets up Sylvanas being able to continue on as a character. We'll see what her role ends up being. And hopefully sets up for, I really want to see Arthas in this expansion, like real bad, real bad. Like an actual, like more than just Uther throwing his soul into like the ether, the right? The Maw, yeah, yeah. Like I actually want to see him. So yeah, we'll see. We'll see what comes of it. Cool. Anything else on this one?
I didn't listen to all of those. I did that campaign quest this week.
Oh, okay.
I didn't realize how short it was.
Yeah, yeah, it's like 5 minutes.
I just did it to get my empowered conduit, and was like, okay, that's done. Let's go.
Yeah, they each have a little bit of. There's some like cool flavor text. The Morgraines have an interesting one. I didn't read too much into it just because I don't know much about them in terms of characters. But they apparently have a really interesting like father son thing going on. So, So cool. So the other sort of lore thing we wanted to talk about quickly was just sort of, WoW had put up a pretty interesting analysis of like Anduin, basically. So now that we've gotten that, again, that final cutscene where we get to see sort of the final conversation between Anduin and Sylvanas before they sort of, I think they go into the final battle, right?
Yeah. This is before the Sylvanas fight, basically.
Yeah. It's interesting to see that Anduin, Anduin seems to be more controlled than anything else. So So it's very much a different, so like, he's no, I don't think he's functioning much like the Lich King did, right? Because it seemed like with the Lich King, while Arthas was being controlled, it was much more of a like Arthas aligned to those ideas, or like the way that he was controlled was that Ner'zhul basically aligned what he was thinking to what Ner'zhul wanted. So basically Arthas like bought in, right? He was like on board, this is the plan, I'm going with it, I'm good with this, right?
Whereas with Anduin, it's way more like straight up mind control.
Yeah. Yeah, just like, I know this is bad, I don't want to do this, and you're going to have to make me do this because I'm not just going to sign into this plan, right?
Yeah.
And it's very much a Anduin putting it back on Sylvanas in terms of like what is happening to him, right? Because Sylvanas had every ability to sort of push back on the jailer, you know, get Anduin out, like free Anduin, right? And while
But she didn't.
Yeah, she didn't, right? And while it's Sylvanas that's doing the ultimate, I think, in terms of like mind controlling Anduin or dominating him, I guess is the terminology that they use, right? And even, I think he even speaks through him at a certain point, particularly in that the Bastion cutscene when he gets the Bastion sigil. Anduin still blames Sylvanas for all this, which is which probably plays a little bit into the part of her like rebelling, right? Because it's, she sees herself as Arthas, which is, I think, probably like maybe Anduin makes her feel that she's, you know, functioning a little bit like Arthas in this case, which is always Sylvanas, I think, still hates Arthas. I don't know. We'll see.
Pretty sure. If they retcon that, like, people, like, there are a lot of things they could retcon and people will kind of roll their eyes and go with, like, like how the Frostmourne works. But if they, like, retcon, like, at this point, they cannot, like, they cannot reasonably say that, like, oh, yeah, Sylvanas and Arthas are cool now. Like, no.
Yeah.
Sylvanas hates Arthas.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. So, so yeah, so it's a very interesting sort of cutscene between the two of them, and sort of shows that like Anduin, I think, still is that sort of, I guess, bastion of light, of the light, right? You could say, and sort of he ends the best part about it, I think there's a lot of back and forth between the two of them. Essentially, like Sylvanas saying like, "Hey, we've come too far. We have to go through with this." Anduin just being like, "No,
you don't."
Like, We don't have to do this. Like, you, like, I'm literally not on board. You're gonna have to make me do everything from here on out. So just be prepared. He's like, I realize that I don't have the power to stop you from doing this, but like, I'm also not gonna sign up for this, right?
Yeah.
Like, you're gonna essentially make me do everything from here on out. And so he leaves sort of the ending, which is very interesting with the quote. So his final quote is basically like, "I only hope that my friends remember me as I was, not what you made me be." And he's speaking to Sylvanas in this case. So it's not that, I think the specific call out here is not what you made me to be, which is essentially him putting all the blame on Sylvanas for what is happening to him.
Yeah.
Which I think is a very, and maybe not a very important point, but an interesting way of him saying like, Zaval's going to do what Zaval does. And it's not like, well, Zaval's the person actually making me do this. You're the one that put me in this position.
She was the enabler.
Yeah. And so everything falls on her shoulders from Anduin's point of view, right?
Yeah.
Which is cool to sort of see that. And maybe this is, again, something that inputs into Sylvanas' character moving forward.
I feel like this is something. So this is something that if this cutscene had been available prior to the raid, I think people would have had a different reaction to the cutscene that plays when you kill Sylvanas.
Yeah.
It contextualizes a lot of things. I think these came out in the wrong order.
I would agree, because it definitely from the end of fight cutscene, because at that point you don't know, you haven't seen this yet. So basically, at that cutscene, all you see is like her seemingly randomly changing, right? I think there's a lot that leads up to that, where she's just like, okay, like maybe she's on sort of somewhat getting on board with like Zaval sort of off the deep end here. I don't want to go through with this, but there's really nothing that sort of points to why she would do that. It sort of comes out of the blue, and that sort of, oh, we just need another redemption arc, right? For Sylvanas. But I think this cutscene makes that cutscene seem a lot more appropriate, because to be fair, I think Sylvanas still has some level of respect for Anduin, right?
Yeah.
And so like him coming out basically being like, yeah, this is your fault. Like, don't blame anybody else but yourself. You put me in this position. Like, I'm not gonna go through with this. I'm not signing up for this. And you're just doing what Arthas did to you. Like, you are now the new Arthas, is essentially what I think Anduin is saying. So I think that puts a lot of doubt into Sylvanas's mind for something like this, which, again, to your point, yeah, makes the her rebelling at the end there makes sense, right?
Yeah.
So it's just weird that we had to fight her for 12 minutes for that to happen.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. Very weird. Very weird. But no, I think, again, like, this coupled with sort of like the Frostmourne sort of retcon, right, sort of sets up some level of, unfortunately, I hate to say this, but like Sylvanas helping us, right? And I hope it doesn't. Like, I hope it's one of those things where we're just like, we lock her up, throw away the key, and we go do it ourselves.
I think what happens is next patch, Sylvanas basically mopes the whole patch. And there's some story content around Sylvanas, but basically she doesn't do anything of use. She just mopes.
Yeah.
And then the following patch, you know, the 9.3, she plays a key role. That basically all of the moping in 9.2 pays off with her helping us in 9.3. That's what I expect to happen personally.
And so do you think we kill the jailer in 9.2 then? Or is that a 9.3 thing?
Didn't they say, have they said, I don't remember if they, so they said either that the jailer was going to be the end boss of the expansion or that he wasn't. I don't remember which one it was.
So my understanding was he was the big bad of the expansion.
Yeah, I think that's correct.
But so I don't, but to be fair, yeah, but I don't know. So to be fair, Azshara was the big bad in BFA, right? Or who was it?
There was no big bad.
Oh, they never really came out. Okay.
So BFA, the beginning of BFA, honestly, the beginning of BFA, the big bad was Sylvanas.
That's true. Still.
You remember the Battle for Undercity thing?
And that's like true.
Bombing her own troops and
yes. Okay. Yeah. On the same page now.
Yep. So they just set up the kind of faction war thing that they did during Pandaria with BFA.
Gotcha.
And lo and behold, ended with basically old gods again.
Gotcha. Interesting. Similarly with Emo.
Yeah. So Azshara basically just had her patch. There was like hints of Azshara stuff with Azshara and old god stuff in Stormsong Foothills, but she was not set up as like the big bad in the way that Zoval has been.
Gotcha. Yeah. So I mean, I guess Zoval in 9.3, and then we get some interim boss in 9.2, or maybe the real big bad is Ner'zhul slash Arthas, and we get to fight him in 9.3.
Maybe that's our 9.2 boss.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I guess, I mean, it feels like... Well,
we already fought Ner'zhul.
Well, the Remnant. Is that actually him?
Yes.
I don't think so. Oh, it was?
Yeah, he's stuck in the armor, right?
That's true. Okay, so we're done with Ner'zhul, so then it's Arthas. In 9.2, and then, you know, Zoval in 9.3. Or vice versa. I think those are the two end bosses left. Calling it. I'll add predictions into our Trello board.
I think that's a pretty safe prediction.
Yeah. But yeah, so I mean, that's sort of the cutscene. I think, yeah, to your point, it's weird that it came out so late. Like the whole story, I don't know, like this patch, I think the other thing about this patch that's sort of weird is like the story beats are so interesting because they're not, again, like this is where I think Blizzard is sort of somewhat messing up in terms of like how integrated story stuff is with like content, right? And like, I get it. Like you want like a thread, like, and they did like, this all comes back, I think, to like MOP in almost every regard. Cause that was sort of where they revamped a lot of the modern questing, or I say modern, but the questing sort of yeah. foundation we have today. Right. Which is like, there's a story thread through everything, which is cool because you have that sort of like every patch builds and builds and builds, but then you end up with situations like this where they don't hit the mark. Like you basically like learn the ending. Like you read, like do this thing where like you read the last page of the book and then read the rest of the book. Right. So you like, you know where it ends up and it doesn't make sense and you're pissed. And then you'd like fill in the blanks to get there. So
yeah.
Yeah. A little bit of issue with the timing here, but I mean, yeah, it is what it is. At least now Sylvanas' sort of piece makes a little bit more sense. I'm still pissed we didn't kill her. I'm still pissed she's going to get redeemed. I'm kind of upset that like, maybe now that she's whole, like, it's just, what do you, like, the crappy part about this is like, what do you do with her character, right? Like, That's the one thing that I think that they've done a very poor job of. I know we're going to go off on a tangent here, but they've done a very poor job of like having faction leaders mean something, because they've swapped every expansion, every couple patches, it's been different, right?
Yeah.
And so like, I think they've like, ever since Legion, really, when they killed off a bunch of people, like it's been, I don't know. Like, I think that's the one thing that's missing in WoW. Like, it was cool going to like, I was Alliance at the time, but going to like Ironforge or like Stormwind Keep, right? And like seeing your faction leader there. And like, I don't know, there was a sense of like the leader telling us what to do is like, you know what I mean? Like there. And like, I think nowadays, like, I don't even know who leads the Horde. I don't know, like.
They have a council now. They have a war council.
Which is just weird. Like, you know, who's the Forsaken leader? I don't know. I'm assuming the Blood Elves are still there, but that dude does nothing, whatever his name is. Lorthamar or whatever. Him. Yeah. You have Bane for Tarn, which is probably the only good leader, right? But like, you had the Tarn that went through something crazy where it was like the original leader, they got killed. Then somebody else got killed, like in a patch. And then Bane is sort of like the pseudo, like when Anduin became leader of the humans, like too young but slowly gaining experience type person. Yeah. I don't know. It's a bit of a tangent, but I think they seem like traditional faction leaders. I think that's so cool. And they just messed it up. So, but cool. I think that's it unless you have any lore stuff, I think that's it for our lore corner of the day.
I mean, there's actually something that I had thought of while we were talking through that, and it's slipped my mind now. So, something that I thought was interesting and I forgot. So, if it comes to mind, I'll bring it up. But otherwise,
all righty.
Questions time. We've got like 10 minutes left.
Yeah, we have plenty of time. We only have one because I think we crammed in a couple last week, but we've got one here for Q&A. So like with any Q&A, if you guys have questions, let us know. You can reach out on Discord, Twitter, wherever it ends up being. But we do have a question from Vroom Vroom, who probably asked this about 2 weeks ago, and sorry for taking so long to eventually get to it. But they ask, what encounters made playing Monk feel particularly good and bad? And so they didn't really give a timeline here. So I'm assuming like we can go back in the vault and see. Yeah. But what encounters made Monk feel particularly good or bad?
So I can only speak to this from a Brewmaster perspective, because that's the only one I've really done raiding on. And on the bad end, I would say any of the bosses that are just like massive amounts of magic damage. So Queen's Court, Queen Ajara, oh gosh, what's the Jars boss from last year? Darkvane.
Yep.
Darkvane, all Jars. Like very high amounts of magic damage, kind of felt really bad. Ajara, notable because you could dodge her like main tank hit. So if you dodged it, you were flying, and if you didn't dodge it, you were in hell. Really did not feel good. But then on the flip side, anything that's like massive amounts of physical damage felt great. Argus was honestly cheating to play Brewmaster on. Stuff like Sludge Fist, Guardian, that kind of thing feels very, very good as Brewmaster.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I will say that like from a Mistweaver perspective, generally the bad fights are ones where Revival dispels something it shouldn't.
Like
Il'gonoth. Oh no, it didn't actually work on Il'gonoth.
They
fixed that. But like in current content, Sylvanas P2 and P3 debuffs are things you do not want to Revival dispel. So yeah, I think imagine on that. Fights like that, like Botanist and Nighthold is always the typical example everybody gives, which is like the phase 3 debuff there went on the tank. You spelled it early, you just wiped your raid. So, and it was always on the tank. So that was actually a really bad example of a bad fight where like you just couldn't use one of your abilities. Which I think is in general, like probably my theme is like, if you can't use your abilities, it's a bad fight. Particularly impactful ones like Revival. But I'll say like good fight design in terms of Monk falls into like two categories, right? And at least in terms of healing, it's the, I'm a melee healer, so I get to ignore shitty mechanics, which is like, Gul'dan is a perfect example of this. Like the eyeballs, I don't know if you remember that fight, but there was eyeballs that would spawn. And they would target random people, like five random people, and they would do AoE or damage around that person. So you had to spread out.
They wouldn't target melee because that meant that you just couldn't bring melee.
Yeah, exactly. So they didn't target melee. They did target Holy Paladins, by the way, on that fight.
Not the melee healer yet.
Yeah. So they didn't target monks, which was a nice change. But then in terms of like movement fights, like the bridge boss in HFC, M&R was fun.
That's not HFC, but...
Or sorry.
Antorus?
Antorus, yes, sorry. Yeah. So the bridge boss, in Antorus was fun to like be able to quickly move. Like you just had to basically get 3/4 of the way and then you could port skip, you know, the rest of the way over there. Anytime where like roll is helpful in terms of doing a mechanic.
Painsmith, this tier actually feels really good on Monk. If you're tanking it, honestly, the damage is not very high, so that doesn't matter. But being able to roll out and use Tiger's Lust to precisely position where you drop the weapon feels good. Having the mobility, like on Mythic, you have to stay with your group to not bait fire in bad spots because the fire will kill people.
Uh-huh.
But if you end up falling behind, you know, you have tools to catch back up.
Right,
as well as a very good way of like if you really fall behind, you can basically reset your position with Transcendence. That's phenomenal. But like almost every fight has like uses for movement speed because there's always a need to like get something from point A to point B, and the faster you can do it, the better.
Right, yeah.
But something that really stands out is like Painsmith for having so much that like the mobility helps with.
Yeah. So any fight that sort of leans into that, I think is really good. And then just from a general healer perspective, any fight where you stay stacked up as a raid group and there's rot damage is just fun for a monk because you can just sit there and like blast. Like Guardians is actually a lot of fun in terms of like just healing because it's fun seeing like, I think I ended at like 14 or 15K HPS, like just absolutely ridiculous. So for me, it was those are the fights, like the ones where you can sort of use your utility, I think are always going to be the more fun fights.
Absolutely.
In terms of just regardless. But yeah, I mean, like Painsmith, I think felt really well. Guardian healing wise, at least on Mythic, while not a great fight in general, does feel good to heal. I'm trying to think of older ones that would make sense.
That doing a dispel on Zekul, maybe.
Oh yeah, there's a cool dispel, like being able to instantly dispel all four of them, particularly in cooldowns, was really good to get that clear. I think it was like there was one where you had to dispel and move, so it was nice to be able to dispel that one as a group in a spirit link and then do the run. There was that
one. Revival for a mass dispel on Ner'zhul?
No, it does not dispel Ner'zhul. That's where the bad fight comes in, is they're very inconsistent with how the dispels work. So
because that's one where that would actually be really useful, because you wouldn't have like obviously a Mistweaver can't dispel everyone because it's a 2-minute cooldown or whatever, but they could do every fourth one, and that would be easier than doing a and safer than doing a mass dispel, because the revival will top everybody up before the dispel goes off.
Exactly, yeah, which is sometimes good on Zekul. It was bad because everyone was already tough.
There's enough rot damage that it actually would be good, like it would top everybody off, then they would get hit by both malevolences, but nobody would die because they were already the revival topped them basically.
Exactly. In general, I think those are the monk fights that have felt good, at least this tier. And then looking back, I'm trying to think if there's any other big ones where I was like, man, monk feels so much fun to play here.
A&R.
Yeah.
that fight.
Yeah. I think that's it for late. My brain is just fried right now, so I can't remember. But anytime you can utilize particularly movement, and actually to me another really nice one is like the Tiger's Lust stuff. So when you can use Tiger's Lust on other folks, it's a lot of fun to help out.
If you have a slow co tank, you always have a good place to put Tiger's Lust when you're playing Brewmaster.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also used it a lot on one of our priest healers on Nazoth. So that they could get in position, because they were like trying to get in position to just start healing people after some of the puddles. So I would just like Tiger's Lust them as puddles dropped. They would zoom over to their position and they just start blasting heals.
Yeah, I used... Oh no, I was a tank there. I don't think I used it on anybody on Nazoth. I'd try and block that fight out of my mind because the fight was honestly awful to tank. Honestly, it was just...
You didn't like Psychus?
Though, so it honestly reminded me of why I quit tanking.
You had nothing to do for 3/4 of the fight. The only fun part of the fight was doing the Psychus phase.
And to be fair, the Psychus phase reminded me that I hate mob movement in this game when I'm tanking. like particularly with trying, like remembering that like there's an invisible wall on the outside of it where like you can't bring the mob too far outside or just start skating away as it does its cast time, even though it'll, you can tank it out there, but as soon as it starts to cast, it starts walking in to get the cast off.
Yeah.
For that, for the puddle or whatever. So yeah. Yeah, that fight was just like, ugh. I hate this off. I hate it.
So, all right. Well,
I think vroom vroom. I think thank you for the question. Yeah, that was a good one. Yeah. Until it's fun.
And I think that's gonna be it for our show today, wrapping up on time for once in their lives.
We did it.
Thank you all for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. We will be back same time next week. And of course, this will be available in audio form on the Peacock Friendly website shortly and on YouTube soon after. And if you want to support all the stuff that we do over on Peak of Serenity, whether it's guides or this podcast or working on Sims, that kind of thing, you can do that over on our Patreon at patreon.com/Peak of Serenity. And if you want to support the community, but maybe you can't contribute financially, please go and hop in our Discord. The Peak of Serenity Discord has a bunch of really good people in it. Come hang out in the long lounge channels, ask questions, help answer questions, that kind of thing. It's a good time. But that is going to be our show for today. So thanks again for listening, and we will see you next week.
Bye.